Hello, and welcome to the Honest Politics Podcast. My name is Alex Gamsik, and I am the founder of Honest Politics, LLC. My company does high-level political consulting, but not for politicians. My services are catered to everyday Americans, just like you and me. So let's get started with this unedited Iowa caucuses edition, the pregame show. So I'm recording this maybe just 1 hour before the Iowa caucuses, and I'm going to release it with my thoughts, maybe a prediction or two, and we'll see how it goes. This is supposed to be impartial analysis, but of course, nobody can erase their unconscious biases, so they will leak in, and depending how it goes, it'll be heavy or not, but we'll see how it goes. So I'm going to start with all of the candidates. I'm going to focus on the top six in Iowa. The rest of them, you can forget about it. So number six, we have Andrew Yang. In terms of expectations, he is not expected to even remotely win because his support is around maybe 3, 4, 5, 6% in Iowa. You need at least 15% in a precinct to get any delegates whatsoever. So I think this may be a chance for him to show high vote totals in the college towns, but Yang is not going to get any delegates this time. And we'll see how his candidacy evolves from here. He even hinted that some of his supporters might go to Bernie Sanders, and whether he leaked that on purpose or not, we'll see if the Bernie folks team up with the Yang folks to put Bernie over the top. But next we have Amy Klobuchar, and Klobuchar is not doing well nationally, but she's doing much better in Iowa. Now, she's polling still at least a few percentage points behind the 15% threshold needed to get delegates, but she is doing better in the rural areas where she could pick up delegates that other urban-centered Democrats are not going to pick up votes. And she may get, if Biden has poor showings, they may go to Klobuchar. If Buttigieg has poor showings, they may go to Klobuchar. If you have pro-women voters, they might abandon Warren in Warren deficit areas and go to Klobuchar. So we'll see how that goes, but you never know. And then we have Pete Buttigieg. Well, Elizabeth Warren and Pete Buttigieg are kind of in fourth and third. Let's start with Warren because the 538 polls show her in fourth in Iowa. She has the college towns more because she's the further left than most of the field. So she's got the younger crowd kind of. What I've been seeing in polls is that she's most people's second choice. A lot of people like her. The problem is that they see an electability issue because they might be getting flashbacks to 2016 with Hillary Clinton. They might be nervous about people in the Rust Belts, the suburban people who might not vote for her. And then the whole Indian American kind of scandal that was happening that threw a lot of people off of her, and they're not sure if that's going to come back to bite her, but she does generate a ton of enthusiasm within the party, and the people who like her really like her. She's tied with Pete Buttigieg for having pretty much the strongest ground game in Iowa, knocking on doors, and she's had some impressive ads trying to make the electability argument. By even one of the commercials showed Warren and a Republican who switched to the Democratic Party just to door knock for Warren. So she's pushing really hard. We'll see if she can win. And I'm sure she's going to pick up delegates, but she's right at the 15% threshold. So we'll see how many she picks up. Next is Buttigieg. He is pretty much similar to Warren, but I think even more so. Pete needs Iowa to continue. He needs an Iowa bump. He needs a New Hampshire bump in order to get decent enough in Nevada and South Carolina and the Super Tuesday states. And so if we look at Pete, he's generating a good amount of enthusiasm in rural counties, similar to Klobuchar, but I think on a stronger scale, where he can pick up a broader swath of delegates. And I received an email from the Buttigieg team. They were talking about how even if some candidates win the popular vote, you know, because the DNC is going to be releasing the first round popular vote, the second round popular vote, and then the state delegate equivalents. The state delegate equivalents, if you want to crudely think of it as the Electoral College, you can. But that's the number of delegates, basically, that are awarded. And depending on the precinct and all of the distribution, you could conceivably win the popular vote but lose the delegate total. And the Buttigieg team seems to be preparing for that with that email. They informed their supporters that Pete has broader support throughout the state, including the rural areas. So he may win more delegates proportional to someone like Bernie Sanders, who, or Elizabeth Warren, in college towns, in very liberal, dense urban areas, where they might get a lot of votes, but not as much state delegate equivalence, similar to how you can win the popular vote, but not the Electoral College. And it's a sticky situation for Buttigieg, because one of his main applause lines is that we should get rid of the Electoral College because it's better to just simply count up all the votes and give the person with the most votes the win. So he's already hedging his bets by saying, look, yeah, I know I say that on the campaign trail, but we got to win in that kind of Electoral College system first before we can eliminate it and just go by raw popular vote. So Pete's got to struggle. If he doesn't do well tonight, if Pete is in fourth or worse, he's done. If he's in third, he's in pretty bad shape. If he can get first or second by at least one or two metrics, then he might see a bump. If he does horribly in the popular vote but still wins the state delegate total, you'll see a lot of people questioning whether he can win large urban areas, and that'll probably perpetuate the African-American narrative that he can't get African-American support, which has been further reinforced by every single time people talk about Pete, they talk about that. So that's something to chew on. But I'm going to release a podcast solely about Buttigieg, perhaps if he drops out, kind of the way I did with Kamala Harris's, and examining his campaign from start to finish. The African-American vote narrative is certainly one of the more interesting topics that I'd like to explore, especially because my opinions on it are not the same as what most of the media outlets are willing to report. Now let's move on to the first and second co-frontrunners, basically, although Bernie does have a lead, apparently, in the polls. We have Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden. Now, Joe Biden's struggle is with enthusiasm and young voters. So we'll see how it goes. But I mean, I've seen a poll where, you know, at least Pete's age range is pretty evenly distributed in terms of supports. Some young people like him, more older people like him. Bernie, a lot more younger people like him. Older people don't like him so much. Warren is a little more even. But with Joe Biden, people, frankly, my age, people younger than 30 are not for him. They're about 3% for Joe Biden. And it's partially because of his age. It's probably because we're not familiar with him. We didn't grow up with seeing him in the Senate. Even maybe a lot of people my age don't remember him being selected as vice president. And he stumbles over his words in debates. So people who are paying a lot of attention to this cycle, people who are young and college educated, probably are not going for Joe Biden, and Joe Biden knows it. He's trying to get the everyday American, the everyday guy, kind of, you know, that image of some person in Wisconsin who's just going about his day, turns on the news and is frustrated with politicians, but still wants to keep his union working job when he goes and, you know, sweats his butt off during the workday, comes home, wants to have a beer and drink TV. I mean, drink beer and have TV watching. You know, that kind of, like, middle America kind of thing. Or just, you know, normal everyday people. He might want to try to incite is the wrong word, but excite the African-American people who voted for Barack Obama. He can say, look, I'm like Obama. You know, Obama trusts me. And get a lot of support that way from the African-American community to generate some of the turnout that Obama did, which certainly helped him win twice. By decent margins. So Joe's electability argument, I'm seeing everyone's talking about electability, electability, electability. And he does have some progressive plans, but overall, when you step back, how people perceive it is kind of a continuation of the Obama era. And we can expect him, you know, he does really well with older voters. So his strengths coming in, his weakness obviously is the young people. He might not have as much enthusiasm. I've heard from other podcasts that his ground game is not the best, so specifically NPR, but the other three have a better ground game. What he does have is the old vote, people who know him and trust him, people who don't really like Bernie Sanders' new leftist socialism, who aren't comfortable with Mayor Pete either because he's gay or they don't know much about him or they're not enthusiastic about a new era in politics. So Joe has the old vote and he has the nervous vote. And by nervous vote, I mean people who are, you know, similarly kind of scared of what's new. They're scared of Trump and they think Joe, given the polling and everything else, is the only one who can defeat Trump. And that's why a lot of older people, a lot of people who are nervous and want to play the safe option might go to Joe Biden. And that includes everyone who's a Michael Bennett fan, everyone, you know, who was on Team Cory Booker, who need a default option to go back to if they're stuck. If they're really trying to decide between Warren and Pete and Sanders and they really don't know what to do, or if they're a Yang supporter and they don't get to 15% in their precinct, who are they going to go with? In that instance, I tend to think they'll go with the default option. And I think the default option throughout this election has been Joe Biden. Back to the default, back to Barack Obama. So you can, I don't know if that'll actually happen. That's a theory of mine. But I think in at least some precincts, they're going to try to play it safe, you know, quote, play it safe. A lot of Iowans are very anxious about this election. They feel like there's a ton of pressure on them to make the, quote, right decision. And instead of voting with their hearts, they might vote with their brains, and they might say, Joe Biden is the best to defeat Trump, and at this moment, that's all that matters. Then we have Bernie Sanders, who has his own electability argument, that he can turn out the most people, and if he just drives turn out enough, then he'll win the Electoral College and defeat Trump. So he's planning on a similar strategy in Iowa where he's just trying to churn out as many voters as possible. And his path to victory really is on a huge turnout of young people, perhaps of minorities, even though there's not too many in Iowa. There's at least growing coalitions of Hispanic, African-American voters and more so. And we'll see what happens. But Bernie Sanders, I do have to mention, and here's my biases again, but online, on Twitter, his supporters are very ravenous and attacky and cancel culturally, and they'll just, like, rip apart anyone that disagrees with them. They use memes to attack Warren for being a snake, or, like, you know, Mayor Pete's a Republican just because he's not progressive enough, even though his policies are more progressive than the last 50 years of presidents. His supporters are ravenous, and it's turned, honestly, a lot of people off. I'm sure a lot of Warren supporters, Pete supporters, basically anyone who's been attacked, Joe Biden supporters, for sure, anyone who's been attacked by the Bernie crowd, I don't see them voting for Bernie Sanders. And in a caucus situation where the second and third choices are sometimes just as important as your first choice, I think the Sanders crowd might have been shooting themselves in the foot multiple times by attacking every other candidate with such disinformation and ferocity that usually you only see from the Trump-style crowd. And of course, that's not all Sanders supporters. There's definitely, you know, intellectual, well-meaning, kind Bernie Sanders supporters. But the visible ones, of course, are the ones that are making the most noise, that are tweeting the most, that kind of thing. And you've seen the New York Times write up about this, you've seen Politico mention this. And, you know, this hasn't gotten too much media attention because I think traditional media tries not to pay attention to this kind of thing too much. But, or maybe they're even scared of being, quote, canceled by the Bernie crowd, too. I'm sure they are. They've received death threats and all this kind of stuff just for reporting the truth on Bernie. at least his supporters. And, you know, when I took classes with Professor Lichtman, he said, you know, there's never anything's an accident. All of this conduct, everything that happens comes from the top. So you have to think that Bernie Sanders is at least complicit in his supporters' behavior, including if you just look at his tepid support of Hillary Clinton in 2016, he didn't stop campaigning against her, and even after he was mathematically eliminated. These kind of things, you know, the constant booing and just uproar during the Democratic National Convention, interrupting every speaker that spoke, pretty sure that was not the Hillary crowd that was doing that. That was the Bernie left-wing crowd that was just causing chaos. And I know I'm going on a rant, I'm sorry. But all of this is to say that Bernie Sanders may not be the second choice of many people, given the way his surrogates, and possibly him behind the scenes, have been acting. I know Pete Buttigieg has said they're actually all kind of friendly to each other when the cameras are off, and I like to think that. I like to think that when this is all over, everyone's going to join up and unite behind the Democratic Party. And whether you're a Democrat or not, that's from a Democratic perspective, that's what you should be thinking, is what I should say. The Republicans, they don't really need to unify because they already have. The Republicans had a nasty primary as well, but what you saw was they coalesced very well and stuck to each other after the election was over because they knew that Supreme Court justices were on the line, every single one of their policies were on the line, coattails down the ballot were on the line, and they didn't want to dissuade people too much from voting for Trump. So that's kind of the overview of all the candidates. I think Bernie Sanders is going to have a real time not being people's second choice. So you'll probably see high numbers in the first alignment, poor numbers in the second alignment, and ultimately, I don't think Bernie Sanders is going to win Iowa overall, although it's going to be close. If I had to guess, Biden might not have good support in the first round, and if he doesn't make the 15% threshold, he's done. But if he does, he'll be a lot of people's second choice. A lot of the, quote, nervous voters will go to Joe Biden, and he will, honestly, I think he'll win the majority of the delegates. And you'll see Elizabeth Warren, the fact that she won't cross that 15% threshold and maybe just even a third of the precincts, I think that spells doom for her, where she will probably come in fourth. If you look at Klobuchar, I think she'll do strong in some counties, but it won't be enough. She won't get very far at all. Pete Buttigieg is a real coin flip, and I really don't know. I like to think that Iowans have seen all of these candidates in person. They've been able to make the right decision, but we'll see how it goes. My guess for Pete is that he'll come in second. I really do think he'll come in second, maybe third, but I think the Biden-Bernie fight is going to dominate at the top. And when it comes to realignment, not a lot of people are going to come back to Pete Buttigieg. He's more of a you really like him or you don't. Although his favorability ratings were the highest in one of those polls that I've seen. Let's go through the highest favorabilities because that'll determine realignment. Pete had the highest, Warren had the second highest, Joe had the third highest. Then a little ways down was Bernie, and then a ways down from that was Klobuchar, I'm pretty sure. Maybe Klobuchar was one or two higher than that, but kind of shows you. And then you have people like Yang, Gabbard, Bloomberg, who don't poll very high. A lot of disfavorables, like strong disfavorables, are on Bernie's side. When you poll non-Democrats, a lot of the huge, strongly unfavorables are on against Warren. But you're also seeing Pete Buttigieg lose a lot of that early shine where he had very high favorables and then not a lot of unfavorables. A lot of the attacks from the online left and from the religious right are contributing to his normalization as a candidate, wherein he's getting kind of the same favorability-unfavorability ratio that many of the other candidates have. So I hope you enjoyed that. I'm basically just freaking out about the results of this and needed to put something together kind of to talk about it. But for the business, I know I haven't been putting out too much content either on social media or through the podcast, and I hope this kind of helps. I'm probably going to do a recap episode going over the results, but that probably won't happen until tomorrow night. You can also hire me to cover the State of the Union for you. I'll take notes on the event. Things that the regular media won't cover, I'll relay directly to you. Anything you want me to watch out for, anything. Hire me and I'll do it. I'm also, if you've listened this far into the podcast, you probably care. I'm teasing a price reduction in my services, so watch out for that. I think it's great for people to start getting into political consulting and see how it can benefit you in your daily life. But anyway, thank you for listening to this unedited pre-Iowa pre-show tailgating with your earphones in, all right? Whew. The results should be coming out at 10 p.m. Eastern time, but if you ask me, it's going to be too close to call. It's going to be too close to call in some precincts, and it's going to go longer than they expect. But anyway, I'll see you next time as we seek to discover more of the stories behind the statistics. And yeah, just to recap, I think Joe Biden wins state delegate equivalents. Think Bernie Sanders wins overall first-round popular vote. I don't know who's going to win second realignment. I think I'll go with Bernie again, but by a much lesser margin because a lot of the second round, he's not a lot of people's second choice. And then Pete Buttigieg basically coming in second. Warren coming in third because she misses viability in some precincts by a hair. Klobuchar maybe getting a few delegates and that's it. Yang getting maybe 3 or 4 delegates from college towns. And that rounds out the rest of Iowa. Which the bounce from it's going to be less because of the State of the Union and impeachment. And now Joe Manchin is saying he wants to censor Trump instead of impeaching him. Which, it's an interesting move, and it's, I think, for him coming from West Virginia as a Democrat, it's a smart move. But anyway, I'll see you next time as we seek to discover more of the stories behind the statistics, and if you can't tell, I'm freaking pumped. This is exactly why I wanted to go into politics, the excitement of election nights. Let's go!